Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Andrew J. Sherman, let me tell you a little bit about him. Andrew is a capital partner in the Washington, D.C. law firm of Catton, Muchin & Zavis, which is a Chicago-based commercial law firm with over 400 attorneys nationwide. Andrew is a recognized international authority on the legal and strategic issues affecting small and growing companies and serves as chairman of the firm's Franchising, Licensing, and Distribution Group. He serves also as an international corporate lawyer as well as a business growth strategist with a focus on both external growth strategies as well as internal growth strategies. He is the author of eight books on the legal and strategic aspects of business growth and franchising. He has an undergraduate degree in political science from the University of Maryland and his law degree from the American University. He's the author of the book that I have in front of me, which is called Franchising and Licensing, Two Ways to Build Your Business. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jim. It's great to be here, and good morning to all the listeners of Small Business Advocate.
Well, thank you, Andrew. It's good to have you with us, and I'll tell you, I am very impressed with your book. One of the things that, and folks, this is a massive book. It's about almost 500 pages, I think, and 450 or so pages, and you've actually written this book from the perspective of the franchisor, the person who is selling a franchise, so to speak, to small business people out in the marketplace. Isn't that right?
That's correct. I mean, the book is designed to be helpful and as a resource to the companies that are thinking about expansion through franchising or other types of leveraging of their intellectual property, such as licensing or joint ventures.
One of the things, though, that I think that, and I hadn't thought about this before, but I think this would be a good book for someone who is thinking about buying a franchise and a franchisee, because one of the most important things, as you know, when you're buying a franchise is understanding how this thing's put together, how this thing that you're buying is put together, if it's put together under good fundamentals of business and franchising, if the documents are right, if they're too favored in the franchisor's direction. By reading your book, I think what they would do is they'd be able to see the perspective of the franchisor and probably pick out a better franchise for themselves and cut a better deal with the franchisor.
Well, Jim, I think you're absolutely right. If any good relationship requires each party to have an insight of the other perspective, or so my wife reminds me all the time. And if you were thinking about acquiring a franchise or going into your own business through franchising, this book might be helpful to give you a behind-the-scenes look at what the challenges of a typical franchisor might be.
You know, I think everybody knows what a franchise is, but why don't you just take a minute, and because I don't know how long it's been since anybody's actually heard someone describe or define what a franchise is. Why don't you do that for us?
Well, it's a fair question. A franchise is when a successful small and growing business decides to expand its market share or penetrate new markets by licensing others to use their brands, to use their operating systems, and to agree to subject themselves to a series of quality control and rules of operation. Probably the best known franchises are companies like McDonald's, which developed the successful fast food format and then expanded initially across the United States and then around the globe. You can eat Big Mac sandwiches in just about every civilized nation on the planet now. And many companies have followed their lead and use franchising as a way to expand their business and build their brand name.
Yeah. In chapter one, you talk about the three critical components of a franchise system, and you just mentioned them basically, but I'd like to dwell on them just for a minute. Number one is the brand.
That's right. I mean, we live in a society that is very brand-driven right now. People are looking at brand extension licensing, co-branding, brand leveraging strategies, and there's certainly probably no more effective way than for a small business to build up their brand by licensing others who agree to use that brand name, and as long as they follow a series of rules about the operation of the business. Clearly, if that brand will be diluted and harmfully affected if franchisees were to go their own way and do whatever they want as licensees of the brand, they have to follow a set of rules.
You know, that's one of the things that you find out about, and one of the most interesting ways to sort of dramatize that is if you're going into a town and you need to spend the night, and you have an opportunity of going to a non-branded motel or a branded motel, a franchise motel, then if it's, especially if the franchise is one that you knew about and you'd stayed with them before, you're probably going to pick the branded motel because you know what that product was like last time, and you expect it to be the same product in this new city, don't you?
Precisely. One of the critical success factors of franchising has always been the consistency that the consumer can come to expect. I mean, the service that you receive at that hotel may or may not be the best service you've ever received, but the one thing you can count on is it'll be consistent service. And by managing your expectations, the franchisor allows itself to grow and its franchisees to flourish by understanding what the consumer expectations are and then managing them consistently.
Well, and that's the reason why if you go to Washington State or Florida, you expect or Russia, as you mentioned a minute ago, around the world, you expect the McDonald's hamburger to taste the same wherever you go, don't you?
You do, and actually, Jim, I mean, I think it's interesting for our listeners to take a moment, whether you're getting ready for work this morning or driving in or whatever you're doing, and just think about how amazing it is that McDonald's serves probably, you know, millions of Big Mac sandwiches a day, and they all taste the same all over the globe. And, you know, once you get past the fact, so what, this is a burger, you start thinking about the computer systems and the operational systems and the training systems that all have to be in place for that sandwich to taste the same all over the globe, and it's pretty fascinating from a business strategy perspective.
Right, exactly. And the operating system is another one that I want to talk about. That's number two in your book in chapter one. I want to come back to that when after we get back from our break. It's 20 after the hour. Andrew, stand by. We're going to be right back. Our phone number, folks, is 888-822-8255. If you have any questions about being a franchisor or a franchisee, give us a call. All right, we're back. It's 24 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Our special guest this hour is our new friend, Andrew J. Sherman, the author of Franchising and Licensing. It's in second edition, and it's also, the subtitle is Two Ways to Build Your Business, which is Franchising and Licensing. Andrew, tell us where we can get your book.
Well, last time I checked, the book was available in all the major bookstore chains, and I know that it's available on Amazon.com and some of the other online retailers. And, you know, sure hope some of the listeners will give it a look.
Well, I'm sure they will. And I want to get back into some of the three critical components that you talk about that's involved in any franchise system. We just talked a minute ago about the brand itself, which is obviously critical. That's the thing that's out there on the sign, so people know what they're going to be getting when they go in the business. But the other one, the second one, is called the operating system. Tell us what you mean by that.
The operating system are sort of the rules and procedures that make it all work. It's what happens behind the scenes to create those consumer expectations and then execute on those expectations consistently. These operating systems are contained in things like operations manuals, in the training programs, in online training for those franchisors that are technology and computer sensitive. And it's important for the franchisees to understand the operating system so that they can deliver on it and their employees can deliver on it day in and day out. In the early days, some franchisees view that operating system as being very imposing, you know, a set of rules that they have to follow as if it's a negative thing. But I think as they see that the operating system is creating the kinds of income and profits that they were hoping for, hopefully they come around and see that operating system is a very useful tool that, you know, thousands and thousands of hours and dollars have gone into the development of that system.
Well, one of the things I'd like to point out is that, and I'm sure you've seen this, I have too, is, as you know, the entrepreneur, almost by definition, is an independent person, maybe a little bit of a Mustang, someone who is a free thinker and wants to blaze his own trail or her own trail. And sometimes when that attitude merges with a franchise in a franchise relationship with a franchisor, that doesn't always make a good combination, does it? Because the entrepreneur thinks that they know better. And one of the things that typically you find when you get a franchisor offering someone a franchise, they've got this thing down to a science, haven't they?
Well, Jim, I think you raise a critical point there. One thing that I've said for years is that true entrepreneurs really don't make good franchisees.
I believe that.
Entrepreneurs are designed to probably either be the franchisor in developing and growing their own business,
mm-hmm.
or to just continue to take that independent route.
Right.
Most franchisees actually that are successful come out of middle, you know, corporate America or middle-level management, where they're used to following a set of rules, and they are either, you know, have been downsized and lost their job or decided that they want to own their own business or following their passion into a certain industry, and they're more used to following that big corporate structure than our prototypical entrepreneur may be.
Typically, they've got a burning desire to follow their own dream, and they've got the management background, but they don't know what they want to do.
Precisely.
And so they look around for a franchise, and that's the reason God made franchises, I guess.
Well,
so those people would have a place to go work for themselves.
Well, and you know, we've definitely got to thank the Lord above for that. I'm not sure what I'd be doing all day. But I think one of the key points is that there's so many different kinds of franchises available to somebody who's choosing now. Over 100 different industries use franchising as a method of growth. So if you are that middle-level manager that's always wanted to own your own business, you're not bound into fast food or automobile services. Now you've got all kinds of choices from all different types of franchisors to select from.
And we're gonna get into some of those a little bit later in the hour. But the next thing I want to talk about is the number three in your list of components, and that's what you should expect from your franchisor, and that's ongoing support provided by the franchisor to the franchisee.
That's right. The three components that you're referring to are not just three strategic components that our listeners need to understand, but they're actually also the three components of the legal definition
mm-hmm.
of a franchise as to when does a company have to prepare these disclosure documents that we can visit on later under federal and state law. But that third component, when it's in place, means that this isn't just going to be an initial license of a brand and a system, but in fact, there will be a continuing and interdependent relationship between the franchisor and franchisee. Said in common parlance, this is going to be a long-term business marriage.
That's right.
You got to be prepared to support each other.
Yeah, exactly. Andrew, stand by. We're going to have to take a break, folks. It's 29 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Andrew Sherman is our special guest, the author of Franchising and Licensing. When we come back, we're going to get Andrew to talk to us about some trends in franchising. Stay with us. All right, welcome back, heroes. It's 33 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and our special guest this hour is our new friend, Andrew Sherman. He's the author of Franchising and Licensing, second edition, Two Ways to Build Your Business. Folks, this is a massive book, 450 pages, and this is a big book. This is not one of those little small books. This is basically a textbook-sized book, and it's got a lot of great stuff in here on franchising, the things that you need to know about being a franchisor. If you've got a product that you want to leverage, as Andrew says, to use his term, to leverage what you have beyond what your immediate capabilities or what you want to operate your operation to make it larger, so you would choose to be a franchisor rather than just to expand your own business. There's a lot of good information in here about copywriting, about licensing, and we're going to talk about that. If not today, Andrew, we may have to take another day because there's just too much in here to cover in one day. Before we go any further, what I want to do is get you to talk to us about some of the trends that you see in franchising.
Well, there's several of them that I think would be important to our small business listeners. And the first one is there are many more early stage companies or small business owners who have chosen to get to grow through this strategy. I'm seeing companies from all shapes and sizes, from all different types of industries, really seriously consider franchising as a method of growth because it can be very effective. Not every franchisor who's a small business is going to have an empire like a McDonald's, but many companies have found that even with 5 or 10 franchisees that they're much more successful than they were as a standalone small business, and they've really created for themselves a little family of franchisees where people can really help each other and use that brand. It's almost more strategically akin to a cooperative than it is a franchise. And I think that's an important trend for our listeners to keep in mind. You don't have to be a McDonald's to begin franchising.
That's an interesting thought, and I had not thought about that. I was going to ask you, Do you know of some successful franchise situations where they never actually get very big? It only maybe winds up being 5 or 10.
Yeah, I think the key to that question is how do you define success? I mean, okay. If your idea of success is to be a global company the size of McDonald's, then you may be disappointed if you only have 20 or 30 or 40 franchises. But for some clients we've had a chance to work with who are small business owners, they define success as, 25 units would make them feel very successful and create a revenue stream for them that they would have never had before, as these franchisees pay to the franchisor an initial franchise fee and a percentage of their revenues.
So if you are a franchisee prospect, if you're a person who's looking for a franchise, you're saying don't be concerned if you have an opportunity to consider a brand that's not a national brand.
Well, I tell you, I think that's another critical point you've raised. If you were a prospective franchisee that doesn't mind being franchisee number 0462 from the Southeast region, then you're going to be comfortable in a larger franchise system. But if you're the kind of prospective franchisee that wants to get on the ground floor of a new opportunity or wants to feel like they're part of a small family, then you might be more attracted to a small franchisor who's just starting out, where you can really add some value and be on a first-name basis with all of the officers of the company, as opposed to feeling like the closest you ever got to management was a regional supervisor.
So instead of being number 0462, you're Jim or Andrew.
That's right.
Imagine that.
Some franchisees are a lot more open and welcoming of that kind of a relationship than they are of being in a large franchise system where they feel like, where they may feel, and no criticism to large franchise systems, but where they may feel like they're just a number.
Well, see, I remember being, I'm old enough to remember the very first McDonald's in the Chicago area, in the northern Indiana, northern Illinois area, some of the very first McDonald's, and you knew 40 years ago they had a great product and it was going somewhere. But how many franchisers were there in those days? Not very many.
Well, that puts
maybe
you
just a handful.
At 39 years old with a great memory.
That's right. That's exactly right. What are some other trends, Andrew?
Another big trend is the internationalization of franchising. I mean, you've heard other people, I'm sure, say that we live truly in a global village and that the international expansion opportunities are not limited to America's big businesses, but very much open to our nation's small businesses, the pioneers.
Mm-hmm.
And franchising affords a small company a chance to do business overseas in ways that they never might have considered before. There might be somebody coming to visit your town that is actually from Europe or South America that thinks that your business format would be successful in their country and would like to be an international master franchise of your business.
Now that is a very interesting concept. I had not really thought about international franchises, because you've got the language situation, you've got the cultural situation, and does it work both ways? I know the rest of the world is always hungry for westernization, but what about the opposite? What about coming back the other way?
Well, I think it does work on both an inbound and outbound basis. We've had some fantastic successes with clients who are U.S.-based companies that have gone abroad, but also with some small companies from Canada and from Europe that have decided that they're in a position to compete on U.S. soil, which is a big proposition since we are the king and founder of franchising. So for an overseas company to come in and take on U.S. companies is a big undertaking.
Right.
They usually will partner with franchisees here in the States who, of course, benefit. And some of them have competed very successfully, even though they're not large companies.
Yeah, very well. Very good, Andrew. Stand by. We've got to take a break. Folks, it's 39 after the hour. When we come back, we're going to get Andrew to tell us why some franchises fail. Stay with us. We'll be right back. All right, we're back. It's 44 after the hour. Thank you for joining us today. You're listening to the show that is dedicated to providing small business owners and small business dreamers with the maximum opportunity to succeed as you follow your dream. I'm Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate. Andrew J. Sherman, the author of Franchising and Licensing, Two Ways to Build Your Business, is our special guest today. He's our new friend. And, by the way, I want to give you my website. I don't think I have this hour. It's www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Just remember the name of the show. Put the normal stuff on the front and the back. Andrew, I would like for you to tell our audience one more time where they can get your book.
Well, to the best of my knowledge, the book's available in all of the major bookstore chains, the retailers, and I know it's available online through Amazon.com and some of the other online book retailers, and sure hope the readers will give it a look.
Well, I'll tell you what, folks, it's written from the perspective of the franchisor. If you're a person who has a product or an idea or something that you'd like to leverage, you'd like to offer as a franchise opportunity for someone. But the thing is as you and I have said, Andrew, if your franchisor is not a good franchise, is not doing its job, or if the franchisor fails, then the franchisee fails. So the perspectives that you offer in your book are, to me, are essential for someone who is thinking about being a franchisee.
That's correct. I think it's important for our listeners to understand that this is a truly interdependent, that's a big word, but it means a lot, interdependent relationship. And if both parties aren't thriving, like in any good business marriage, there's going to be some problems.
Which is the reason why I want you to talk to us now about some of the reasons why franchisors fail. And remember, folks, sometimes you get this confused, and I know I do, a franchisor is the person who is offering the franchise. The franchisee is the person who is going to have the local operation.
Exactly.
Okay.
And, you know, this may sound like I'm joking around at first, but one of the main reasons franchisors fail in the early stages is because they haven't read this book. And I don't mean that, you know, as a promotional plug.
I hear you.
The main thing is, for many franchisors, early stage companies thinking about franchising, it's amazing to me, but they do not take the time to reach out for the kinds of resources, be it this radio program or books that are available. I mean, this isn't the only book aimed at the prospective franchisor. There's information available on the Internet. There's information available from the International Franchise Association. And yet, no company takes the time to really research this thing. They just sort of wing it.
Well, don't forget, they're entrepreneurs.
Well, I understand. But
you know, they're independent. They're trailblazers and
that's
pioneers.
Right.
You know, they think they've already got all the answers.
Well, even that. I mean, I've spent my life devoted to helping entrepreneurs grow their businesses, and I agree with what you just said. But the good entrepreneurs are also disciplined, and they understand they've got to have a plan, a business plan, to execute a franchise program. And the components of that plan will come from gathering up resources. So certainly the first two mistakes that are common are not gathering resources and doing your homework on what it takes to be a good franchisor, and not having a good business plan as to what it's going to take to execute. Some of the other mistakes go back to the things we talked about at the beginning of the hour, some of those three critical components. Maybe your brand is weak, or maybe it can't be protected at the federal level. Maybe people don't relate to that brand the way that you would hope they would.
What makes a brand weak?
Well, if a brand can't be protected, or if a brand is super regional, as I call it, a brand that might really, you know, maybe it's based on a famous athlete from Arizona that everyone in Arizona has heard of, but nobody outside Arizona ever heard of.
Yeah.
And it's difficult to build that brand.
Mm-hmm.
A good example up in Canada is a company called Tim Hortons, which is a very famous Canadian coffee and donut chain that was actually bought by Wendy's here in
right.
the U.S. In Canada, everyone knows who Tim Horton is, yet I guarantee you less than 1% of all Americans know that he's some Canadian sports legend.
Well, you're right.
And,
I never heard of him.
Exactly. I had never heard of him.
So if they want to import that product or export that product to the United States, they're going to have to call it something else.
Either, or they're going to have to spend, it's an excellent point you raised, they're either going to have to change the brand or, as some companies have tried to do, spend a boatload of money promoting the brand and educating us on the Tim Horton story.
Right.
Other mistakes that companies make, the lack of a good screening system. You know, franchises are supposed to be awarded, not sold. And when I say that, I mean that, you know, you don't just pick anybody and invite them into your family. You need to have a set of criteria. Figure out what makes a good franchisee for our system, not just deep pockets, but, you know, people who are going to be devoted to performing and delivering in the underlying business, that they'll have a passion and commitment to following the operating system.
Okay, now, folks, if you're thinking about being a franchisee and you're looking around, if you've never approached a franchisor about being a franchisee, then what you don't realize is something that Andrew just said, and that you are selected. You are offered that franchise. And as you know, Andrew, many, many people wish to be a franchisee of whatever whatever brand, but many are turned down for a number of different reasons, aren't they?
That's correct. And, you know, I think it's important to understand that people, the franchisees, have to qualify for that system. They don't just automatically get it because they picked up the phone and called.
Exactly. Stand by, Andrew. We've got to take a break. Folks, when we come back, we're going to get Andrew to talk to us some more about franchising, especially from the franchisee standpoint. Stay with us. We'll be right back. All right, we're back. It's 54 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Andrew J. Sherman is our special guest this hour. He's our new friend. He's the author of Franchising and Licensing, Two Ways to Build Your Business, and the book's available in bookstores. And did you tell me that it's available online in the, at the online bookstores?
Absolutely.
Okay, good. And I'll remind you folks that my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Thank you for checking that out. Andrew, let's wrap up the hour by talking about franchising from the franchisee's perspective, the person who's out there running the local business, operating that local franchise. The two things that they need to understand is that they need to know is, number one, they have to understand what's involved in being a franchisee, because it is a little bit different from running a business that you just start from scratch. And they also need to understand what to expect from the franchisor. Would you talk to us a little bit about that relationship?
You just used probably the key word, Jim. You may not have even known you were doing it, but the word expect. I think that most franchisees, the big mistake that they make, the biggest mistake, bar none, is they have the wrong expectations about what the relationship will give them and what it won't. Some franchisees think that they come in with an expectation that this will be easy, that it won't be hard work. And I don't think a listener, there's not a single listener to your show that doesn't know that small business is hard work.
Yep.
And just because there's a franchisor who's there to support you doesn't mean that the franchise is not going to be difficult to run and hard work to build, and that it couldn't fail. It can fail.
Mm-hmm.
What franchising does is reduce or mitigate the chance of business failure, but not eliminate it. And I think that if there was one key message in our short time left this morning to communicate to those listeners that are prospective franchisees, it would be to have realistic expectations about what they can hope to gain from the franchising relationship and what's unreasonable to expect from the franchising relationship.
Well, I think it goes back to what you said and what we said at the very beginning. You're going to get a brand, and that's going to give you a little bit of a jump start in the marketplace. You're going to get an operating system, and that's going to help you to be maybe better organized in the way you produce the product and service than you would have perhaps on your own. And you're going to get some support from the franchisor. But other than that, you're still going to have the potential for cash flow problems. You're still going to have to deal with location. You're still going to have to deal with employees. You're still going to have to deal with your own work ethic and your ability to get along with people, aren't you? All those things are the same.
All those things are true, and therein lies some really sage advice, Jim.
Well, what do we need to look for from when we're the franchisee prospect, and we've got half a dozen franchises on our desk here. We've seen them in magazines, or we've seen them as we've driven around the country. What's one of the first things we look at when we try to choose a good franchisor?
I would go and visit the franchisor's headquarters, get to know the people, look at little things like, are doors open or closed as you walk through the office? Do people seem happy and motivated? Get on the phone and call some of their other franchisees and ask them whether the franchisor has delivered on the promises that have been made. Ask the franchisees if they're doing okay financially. Really do your homework and choose an industry, not because you think it's hot or because it's where the most profits are,
right,
but choose an industry because that's where your passion lies. You know, you're going to be doing this business 10 and 12 and 15 hours a day.
Right.
You know, don't pick something that you can't get passionate about and really enjoy.
And by the way, that 10 or 12 or 15 hours, that's on your off day.
That's right. That's on your off day.
Andrew, we got to wrap it up for this hour. That's got to be the last word. You did a great job. There's so much more to cover. We're going to get you back on real soon and continue our discussion about franchising and licensing. Thank you very much.
Well, we had a lot of fun, Jim. Thank
yeah.
you.
See you later. All right, folks, I've got to wrap it up for this hour. Before I go, I want to thank the most important members of the show, my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest country in the world. And remember today, be guilty of committing a random act of kindness. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program...
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.